So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Time to play the game. Time to play the game!
Politics.com. It's going to be an interesting night. We got a lot going on. Before we get there, though, let's go ahead and make one quick announcement. Our good friend Dale the Truth Gillespie will be taking a sabbatical for a few weeks. He's got some things that have to be taken care of. His schedule has been crazy for a while, and he's been hanging in there as long as he could with this crazy schedule he's got. But he's going to have to take a few weeks, take care of a few things that need to be done. So, anyway, I will be filling in for him on Wednesday and Thursday nights as usual. Or I'm here on Wednesday nights as usual, and then Thursday nights I'll be filling in for him until he can get everything taken care of. That happens sometimes, man, when you work and you got all these different responsibilities. So I look forward to his return. We may run some repeat shows for you guys who love Dale the Truth. And, hopefully he can get everything done a little bit quicker than he thinks. But right now we're planning on a few weeks. Just so we can take care of some business. So I want to make sure everybody knows that. And that little cough you heard in the background, of course, was our good friend, Mr. Ed Martin. How are you, sir?
Doing all right, Mr. Springsteen.
I was expecting you to be a little bit later. It is Tuesday night. That seems to be a busy day for you. So, welcome on time.
Yeah, well, we got it done today. I mean, it wasn't not always pretty, but we got it done. Actually just leaving the shop, so... But there you go. It's not like I'm bailing, not like I'm getting out after 8 or 10 hours. It's still a solid 11, 12, so.
Well, I understand, man, but, you don't want to get out 11, 12 too often. Then we'll think you're just getting lazy.
It's like we say where we're at. It's like, oh, man, we're a bunch of lazy bastards. We only work half days, 12 hours.
I understand, man. I understand. Half a day don't work, but even in Obama's world, a half a day is too many hours. It might cost you money. We do want to put a real quick shout out to a good friend, Mr. John Bowl, over at Wave 3. John Bowl, folks, is one hell of a guy. He really is. He's a class act, and he's been going through some major stuff for about the last 5 or 6 days. His daughter and her friend were both 14 years old, and they were struck by a car. crossing the street at Hurstbourne Parkway and Lynn Station Road about 6 days ago. You know, it was pretty bad. His daughter suffered a fractured skull, a broken leg, and a broken wrist. And she's had multiple surgeries and everything else. Anyway, she got released to go home. And, you know, I know that's good for John. John, everybody should know from local news, he's been a hallmark of in-depth reporting and investigating and things like that. But more importantly, he's a good dad, a good family man, and I consider John a friend. He's a class act. So I wanted to make sure that for those who have been paying attention to what's going on here, those who have been concerned about John and his family, Brianna is headed home, and, you know, Godspeed to her for healing on her injuries. Okay, now we've got that done. Speaking of Wave 3, Ed, let's just get right into business. Are you up for that?
Sure, let's do it.
It's worth
noting, you know, people need to know. I have no idea where you're going with this, but okay, go.
Well, you know, I never really make that announcement.
I've been sequestered out in a warehouse all day, sweating my ass off. So, sure, Ed, what have you
picked
up while I was driving a forklift? Just drop it
there
right in my lap. Let's do this.
There you go. Well, I usually make an announcement on Wednesday nights a lot. When Dale comes on Wednesday nights, obviously he won't be here this week. But when he comes on Wednesday nights, you know, I usually let the whole world know, because what our audience doesn't know, I guess, on Monday or Tuesday, because I really don't make the announcement, is none of our shows are scripted. Nobody, you don't know, Dale doesn't know anything I'm going to get into, any topic whatsoever. So it's kind of interesting because, you know, one of the things that we always had before.
It's like an intellectual practice for us. It's like, oh, it's like walking into a dark room, you know. Is it going to be full of roses or full of a bunch of Hell's Angels ready to beat the crap out of you? I have no idea. So it's like, you know, sometimes that just, my jaw drops. It's like, oh, no, you're not taking me there, are you?
I guess that's a good way of putting it, because, you know, when we first started a radio together, me and you, we were at WKJK 1080 AM right here in Louisville, and you know, when we started, every show was basically scripted. I mean, we would sit down, we'd meet together, we'd have a
sampler platter, appetizer sampler, and eat chicken wings and stuff, and just talk about what we were going to do, maybe drink a beer or two, and it's like, all right, well, let's do this. I call up, it's like, oh, God. He's like, let's get right into it. It's like, well, let's go. You know, let's do it. Let's find out where he wants to go today.
Well, and that's it. And one of the things about that, too, we always invited our guests to join us. This was at Buckheads on Bardstown Road, where we went. And we would always invite our guests to join us. It seemed like we had a guest about every week. I mean, it really got to that point. But it got to the point where we were focusing on a guest every week. So we were spending all our time focusing on, you know, trying to get their message out, their needs, whatever. And we really didn't do a lot of reporting on everything else. You know, for example, if we had a candidate that was running for office that happened to be a guest that week, we would spend our time, you know, getting up to speed on everything they had. We'd sit down with them to make sure we knew where they wanted to go. You know, we wanted to be fair to our guests. So the one thing I decided when I opened the show on Blog Talk Radio, is, you know, this was going to be no host barred radio. I mean, nobody's going to know anything. I, obviously, because I've got to run the show, so I've got to have the content. But I didn't want Mr. Martin and I didn't want Mr. Gillespie to have any idea of where we're going, because I want a deep, honest communication. And I believe that's been very effective, Ed. Our numbers are incredible. Our numbers are so much better since we started this avenue over a year ago.
And I sometimes wonder if people out there, if they can tell sometimes by my responses, you know, it's a thinly veiled, why in the hell did you go there? I'm not going there with you. You're going there alone, friend.
and that's happened on more than one occasion, and that's okay. But I want our audience to know that, because we really never talk about that on Monday and Tuesday night, because we're so familiar with each other and things like that, you know, that we kind of, you know, once one of us goes somewhere, we have a working knowledge, you know, in most cases. But you never know what the topic's going to be. You never know where I'm going to go with it. And I think that makes better radio for our viewers, because the whole point, or our listeners, I should say, the whole point is to make people think and have that discussion. So, you know, a lot of times we'll go back and forth, and I'm hoping that opens the door. And with that in mind, real quick, before we get into our first story tonight, 858-683-1326. or 502-805-0334 are the numbers to call in live. For you guys who are listening in and listening to you right now, please hit that number 1 on your dial pad, and I will know that you went on the air. And there's always a live chat open as well for this show. So if you guys are just listening in, click and join in the live chat, see what's going on. We never know. Okay. I want to get into this Barstown police officer shooting for just a few minutes here, Ed. And I'll tell you why. Today, Kentucky State Police spokesman, Master Trooper Norman Chaffins, he's of the E-Town Post, said that based on the circumstances that they're investigating right now, they believe more than one person was involved in the shooting of Officer Jason Ellis back on May 25th. You know, they went into this, and they're talking about now their gut feelings. The police chief is Rick McCubbin, and you know, you either love Rick McCubbin or you don't. Some people think he's good. He was up for the job here in Louisville at one time, I think in the last round against Steve Conrad. And I personally, for one, am glad Steve Conrad got it. But McCubbin was my second choice. So I'm one of those guys who think he can do a good job. You know, but what we're finding out here is they want to talk about more than one person. But here's what we know happened, and this is why it's interesting to me. 33-year-old Officer Jason Ellis, he was a K-9 officer, stopped on an exit ramp on his way home from duty to pick up some tree limbs that somebody had dropped off on the exit ramp. So he went to move those out of the roadside and carry on to go home. He had just finished his shift. He was running a little bit late because he had just transported a prisoner. You know, but when he stopped to pick up those tree limbs, he was shot and killed. It was definitely an ambush-style shooting. I don't think there's any doubt about that. It was definitely intentional shooting. It was definitely a planned shooting. But here's the thing. For me personally, there are a few cops out in Barstown that are corrupt and crooked as hell. There are. And I'm not going to go into names or disparage individuals right now. Okay? But the drug trade is alive and well in Barstown, Kentucky. Just like it is here. As a matter of fact, they get some of their drugs from here. Right here in Louisville. And we know where those are coming from down in Portland, whether they want to let us know or not. So my thing is, if this officer, you know, it's one thing, me and you are creatures of habit, Ed, we really are. If I've got the same job every day, I'm going to use the same route at the same time going home, and it's easy to predict where I'm going to be, as it is with most people, if I was doing that line of work. In McCubbin's case, however, in Jason Ellis' case, however, you know, Jason Ellis was running late, so he wasn't going to be on the exit ramp at the time he normally would be going home. And the tree limbs were set as a diversion to make him stop and get out of his car. You don't do this stuff hours in advance.
There had to be. I was telling a truck driver, a friend of mine, right after it happened. Mm-hmm. I said, if they're smart, they're going to triangulate and pull cell phone records because there had to be a spotter.
That's exactly what I'm going to hear. And my question at this time, and I'm going to piss off a lot of cops by asking this, but I know that there are police out there who are paid by these drug guys to kind of keep them in the loop. I don't think there's much doubt in my mind anyway that Jason Ellis, as a K-9 officer, had pissed somebody off that was doing drugs. That's what he does. You know, he uses his dog to sniff out drugs. That's what he does. So my bet is he got too close to something in one of his arrests, and this was a payback. But who was the forward caller? That's what I want to know. There are a lot of rumors going around right now that there was an officer. This is unconfirmed rumors, unsubstantiated. That's why I'm not giving names of who I've been told it was. But there are a lot of rumors going around right now that there was a Barstown police officer who made the initial call and gave the forward call. Now, do I believe that? I don't know. It's just an unconfirmed rumor. But, you know, it would almost make sense, and I can't understand why they've not mentioned one thing. This investigation has been going on for 3 weeks now. There's not been one mention of any phone record, you know, coordination or triangulation like you're talking about. You know, we all know that the police officers' phones are paid for by the department, so that's all free knowledge. You know, I'm not finding out. I'm not seeing anything in this investigation these guys are talking about. That's kind of disturbing to me. How about you?
Well, I won't even go there. I won't even speculate as to who it is. Just as a matter of logistics, like I say, like the truth is, there had to be a spotter because if there were limbs out, anybody, any decent person would have stopped and chucked the limb out of us off the side of the road. I do it often. Saw a guy do it yesterday on one of our roads. after the storm went through. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I have absolutely no idea who would have made the call. I won't even speculate. But, yeah, it does make sense that on a fairly well-traveled road, you got to time it right. Otherwise, like you say, some good Samaritan's going to blow your plans out of the water. It's going to get out and toss the stuff off the side, and your target's going to drop right through. Today,
right.
They had the time for the placement of the limbs. At least that's what it would seem to me. It's like that's a real low probability. It's like, let's some limbs out there an hour before somebody's going to get there, and, you know, and they'll be the ones to clean up. No.
Well,
no.
It is interesting.
Somebody had to climb it up. You know, there's a lot of good people in Bardstown. They're country. You know, it's what they do. They'll stop. You know, they're the kind of people that will pull their cars off the side of the roads for funeral processions. And by God, they'll stop and throw a limb out of the road if it's on there. They're not going to let Grandma and Grandpa run over it. They'll clear it up. So, yeah, somebody had to time that thing, and they had to time the placement of that, you know, that debris well.
Well, and I agree, and there are a lot of good people in Bardstown. I'm not trying to disparage all of the citizens of Bardstown in any way, shape, or form. I'm just raising the questions that should be asked right now that should have already been answered. And the only thing that we know publicly is that there was a woman who drove around the tree limbs, apparently right before Jason Ellis, the officer, got there. She had drove around the tree limbs, and they interviewed her, and that's all we know at this time. So, I mean, I just want to make sure we do our best. I want to keep this case alive until these people are caught, and I don't care if it's an inside cop or a drug crap or a drug ring. I don't care who it is, but I want them caught, and I think we need to do our part. So the Kentucky State Police have set up a special email address for anybody who has any tips of this investigation whatsoever. The email address is Ellis, E-L-L-I-S, case, E-tips, E-T-I-P-S, at ky.gov. So if you guys can do that, if you know anything, know anybody that does, please forward that information to the Kentucky State Police at lscaseetips@kentucky.gov. And our own local River City FOP, and I have a lot of respect for these guys at the River City FOP. I've worked with a lot of these guys, even though I've got some personal things against some of the officers these days that are thugs. The FOP is usually a great group of guys, or so are most of LMPD. And these guys are going to host a benefit on Saturday, June the 22nd. That's this Saturday. And they're going to have it at the Lodge itself at 6204 Price Lane in Louisville. They're getting all kinds of donations, but they're also looking to do an auction and a raffle and things like that. So if you guys have any items you want to auction off or something, or you want to donate for them to auction off, get a hold of the River City FOP at area code 502-968-0117. These proceeds will be going to help the Ellis family. Here's an officer who had young kids and everything else. You know, so we want to help as much as we can help these guys in this tragic situation. And moving on, let's go, Ed. Now we're going to get into stuff you really, really like. Taxes. Yes, you heard me, Ed. Taxes. I know you like talking about those. Louisville Mayor Greg Fisher said late Monday that he is going to support the creation of yet another tax increment financing district. This time it's going to benefit the University of Louisville Research Park in eastern Jefferson County. The research park is a $450 million, 253-acre park, and it is a proposal from their university's nonprofit foundation. Another tax increment financing. How's that TIF working for the KFC Yum Center, Ed?
Well, they plan that poorly. I can tell you this, the TIF for where they're talking about for this research center going to do wonderful, because generally TIFs are set up for in areas that might be blighted, areas that need to end up, you know, that are starving economic development. That doesn't happen to be where this is. Where this is happens to be probably some of the best and most expensive and most vibrant commercial real estate maybe in the state. I mean, it is prime land. You know, you're talking high-dollar district. It doesn't need any support. You know, if somebody's going to build something and it's technology, right, this is where they want to build. This is where all the rich people live. I mean, God, what a waste. I mean, that'd be like setting up a TIF on Fifth Avenue in New York or something. It's like, God, right. They don't need it. This area doesn't need it. Save it for, you know what, set up, get some economic development in West Louisville or Portland, someplace like that. But this, I mean, I am an East Ender. I actually used to live in an old subdivision not too far from this place at all. And I'm telling you, it's boomtown out there. It doesn't need a little surtax being put on the restaurants or anything or whatever out there. Doesn't need it. Total waste. This is greasing somebody because it makes no sense otherwise.
That's exactly what I thought, and I'm glad you put it out there so eloquently, because this is you know, everything in real estate, when you hear about real estate, is location, location, location. That's the golden rule. This is, like you pointed out, this is prime property. It's in a great area. Why we need to put a new tax increment financing there, this is nothing more, and I'm in total agreement with you, this is nothing more than greasing the pig. And I tell you who's getting greased out of this, it's going to be Greg Fisher's sister, Lynn, and her friends who are getting greased on this deal. They're the ones who are going to get the money from this. And that, to me, is just one more example of what's wrong with this city. Why are we going out raising taxes in a high-rent district anyway that has plenty of money is beyond me. So what you're ultimately going to do is take away from any other further development for other stuff out there. I don't understand why this is happening. I don't see the reasoning for it. It's totally backwards to me. It defeats the whole purpose of tax increment financing. And you're also talking about U of L. I mean, I'm not being majorly mean here. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, they've got a nonprofit foundation that's going to be building this thing. It's a research and technology park. You know, U of L has plenty of money. They're not hurting for money.
No.
So why are we going to have to support even more at a time when everybody else is hurting?
You know, at this point, all I can say is Adam Edlin came out, and people think we don't like Democrats. We kind of like Adam Edlin. He came
I
out
love
and
Adam
he told them, and he lit these guys up for all these little taxes, these special taxing districts that exist and the lack of rules. So I would say at this point, somebody please call Adam Edlin and, you know, have him do a quick audit on this and say, you know, this does not fit the parameters of a special taxing district. Really doesn't. Don't need it. You know what? If U of L needs the money, they can sell off a few acres. They've got plenty of them. Just sell a few off. They'll get millions for it.
I agree.
They've already done it. You know, that's the thing. People don't realize. They've already sold off slivers of it and made some serious bank on it. I've watched it happen. I've been out there. So, come on, guys. Let's quit goofing around. Let's get Adam Edlin in. Adam, if you're listening, by all means, torch this idea for us. Help us out here. Save it for somebody who needs it, like a thing, like West Louisville or something like that. Please, help us out here. Well,
see, that's exactly where I was going to go, too, because, you know, we continue. This administration, Greg Fisher got hired for this job and won this job because of the West End votes. Greg Fisher played the Jerry Abramson School of Politics to win the election. He went to the West End. He took about $50,000 cash down there or better, spread it around to idiots like Jerome Sutton and all the others down there. They bought him the West End vote because he promised he was going to do something for them. And here we once again have a situation where we're going to take a bunch of money, we're going to create a TIF district out in the East End, we're going to take all this out to the East End to benefit them, and the West End still isn't getting squat. It's so mind-boggling to me how these people in the West End can continue to vote for these Democrats who have lied to them for decades, not just a year or two or one election, decades, and they continue voting them in office. I'm with you. I think this is a situation where somebody needs to put the brakes on it, take that money elsewhere.
Yeah, for me, this is not only the West End getting pooped on. This is the East End, because, I mean, anybody that lives out in the Shelbyville Road corridor or LaGrange Road corridor, you know, or the Harsprung Lane corridor, because, mind you, this intersects all those, you know, roads full of money. It's Shelbyville Road, it's all developed east, west, north, and south of this area. This is like the biggest green spot left. I mean, it's just big people, fallow ground that probably could easily pass an E1. You know, easiest land, biggest chunk of land to develop out there. It's all developed. So, I mean, not only do they not need it, I would say Eastenders should be looking at it going, what the hell are you talking about? You want to, because you're the ones that are going to pay. You know, whether, I don't know if you're going to be buying gas across the street. I don't know if that falls into it, or you're going to be shopping in the area, or if that's part of
anything
it.
Within the, anything
area.
Within the district.
Whatever you do, I mean, this is, if they're going to surtax every, all the business activity in the area, it's like East End, they're saying, you're getting screwed on this. You know, UofL's just reaching into your wallet and saying, thank you, you know, you support the businesses, you create jobs, you're a vibrant section of town. Hey, let's turn you into an organ donor. You're healthy. That's basically what they're saying. So I would say the West End should say, hey, wait about us, and the East End should say, wait a minute. The hell do you mean you're taking more of our money?
I totally agree, and there's a couple other things alarming here, too. You know, and you can go to the Courier-Journal for this story. This is where I pulled this one from. But it's really interesting, too, because when you talk about the TIF district, any business that's within that TIF district boundaries is going to pay the taxes. Any business.
Yeah.
I don't care who you are. So it's not like they're going to have pick and choose which business is going to. But they did make a couple of little relevant things here that I think are important in the big picture. It says that any jobs that move into this new taxing district from elsewhere in the city won't count towards this revenue, but any new jobs will. So if you take an employer downtown that has 300 employees, 400 employees, or in the West End, if you can find a place that has 100 employees, you go down to West End, take a place down there that has 100 employees, they're going to get all these special incentives to move out here, whatever, for whatever reason, and everything else. Those jobs, they don't have to worry about paying TIF taxes on, the tax increment funding on. If they add one job, they do. But then you're taking those jobs and displacing them from a place that really needs them in the West End, moving them all the way out to the East End, so West End citizens can't get to it. Now, I know that's like a big, a big puzzle, but, I mean, the reality is this. The way that that's worded kind of concerns me a bit, too, because where are these so-called jobs that are elsewhere in the city? What else is going to move out there? It's a research and technology park. So
yeah.
What's going to move into this?
All the effort that's gone into creating that technology corridor on Main Street, Eon Main, as they call it. I'm guessing a portion of Main Street's probably in the TIF for the arena. So now what are they looking at? A guy that might have technology, that little computer support place, whatever, mm-hmm. network, but on Eon Main, it might be looking, going, hey, what are you saying? You said if I move out there, I'm out of the TIF? Cool.
That's it.
Let's go.
So that's what I'm wondering. That's what I'm getting at, the bait and switch. That's what I'm getting at is the bait and switch. So everybody else is going to have to pay except for this guy who comes in, who's in a TIF district now. That's exactly where I'm going, Ed. Well put. Because it's all about the bait and switch.
Which also says to the companies that have located out there, created jobs out there, and made it, you know, contributed into making it a vibrant area. Now you're saying, hey, screw you. Guess what? Your cost of doing business just went up because for no other reason than you're successful and we've got a big empty parcel of land that we want you to pay for. So, yeah, up with your expenses.
I agree with you. That's what makes it really interesting because I'm wondering how this is all going to play out. And, you know, and I'm telling you, my gut tells me that this is going to involve Lynn Fisher and her cronies because there's not one thing out there that she hasn't abused being the mayor's sister to get for herself. And I guarantee you there's an involvement. I'm going to find it and I'll prove it. But I guarantee you there's an involvement. In the meantime, let's go ahead and take our bottom of the hour break. When we get back, let's get into some good stuff, man. Let's get into Jimmy Hoffa. Yep, Jimmy Hoffa news is all over the place again today. We're going to talk about Jimmy Hoffa and unions and a few other things when we get back. Stay tuned, folks. Listen to the Ed Spraker Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Spraker of the My View Matters Radio Show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound.
are. I tell you, man, I love that part of the song, Ed. I'd like to find your inner child and kick it in his ass. I tell you what, that would take care of so much stuff in the world today. It's unbelievable. Welcome back to the MBM Radio Network, folks. I'm Ed Springsteen, your host, along with Mr. Ed Martin. For you guys in the listening queue, once again, reminder, don't forget to hit that number one on your dial pad if you want to be heard on air. For everybody else, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334 if you're in the Louisville area. You know, we're going into break. We spent some time talking about, you know, all kinds of different things. I saved the last half of the show for a reason. I want to get into some of the stories going around now involving unions and the work. But I guess the biggest story going along that line is Jimmy Hoffa. They think they know where Jimmy Hoffa is buried, yet once again, they're going off a tip from 85-year-old Tony Zerilli. He was in jail at the time Hoffa disappeared in 1975. For everybody that don't know, Jimmy Hoffa was president of Teamsters from 57 to 71. But it's fascinating because the FBI, I'm watching a video today, you've got one guy on a backhoe. You got one guy on a backhoe trying to dig a hole looking for these concrete slabs on this acreage that was bought by one of the mob guys, and that's where they're saying he's buried at now. And 12 FBI agents sitting around. And the thing that was so puzzling to me about that is we continue to talk about resources. We continue to talk about not having manpower. And I'm watching a dozen guys watch one guy on a backhoe work that works for the FBI. We went out, checked it. I know it's funnier than shit, but we have actually went to so many places looking for Hoffa, it's unreal. They've been to a horse farm northwest of Detroit, digging up, looking for him. They went to a Detroit home in 2004, digging up and looking for him. They went to backyard pool 2 hours north of Detroit in 2003, digging up, looking for him. But we can't find the time or find the energy or the efforts to want to check out legitimate tips that are going to kill live people with the Sarnia brothers and the Boston bombings. Am I missing something here? Am I way off track?
Actually, I don't think you're far enough off track. I mean, the fact of the matter is, like you said, the guy who says he knows where it is, he's 85 years old. Hoffa would have died of natural causes by now. Anybody that had anything to do with it, 99% of them are dead. There's not going to be any prosecutions, you know. Case closed.
I totally
it's like
agree.
stop wasting time. That's like if you had a dog run away 25 years ago and you're still looking for it. They don't live that long, you know. Everybody's dead. Let it go. You know,
go ahead, because I'm totally with you. Because Tony Zerilli apparently was a captain. He was second in command of the local Detroit mob at one time. All right, and he's the guy who's giving all the information now. Yeah, I know. And he was in prison at the time Hoffa disappeared. But the FBI says the reason they're going after this time once again is because his mob ties give him some credibility. Well, if that's the case, if it's his mob ties that gave him credibility, then where was the credibility on the other, you know, half a dozen times they've spent money and resources digging up people's houses, driveways, and pools and farms looking for a body that they never found because they weren't there?
So
you know,
I think in a way it's kind of funny because what you've got is this old mobster who's, you know, he's old.
Right.
For all time. And, you know, let's face it, they never got along great with the authorities anyway. That was the enemy. So you got
right.
Some old guy who's out of the game. He's still got his name. And he's going to sit there and he probably made a phone call and says, hey, he probably told some guys, and said, watch what I do. Watch how I make these fools jump through. He says, I'm just going to tell him he's buried somewhere. And he says, you know, when they realize I'm some kind of, you know, former capo, but I'm going to make the FBI, they're like little trained chihuahuas or something. He says, I'm going to say he's buried here and just watch him. And it's going to make national news. It's going to be hilarious. He says, we're going to run him around on it. We're going to run him around on a snipe chase. Yeah, I think that's the mob's messing with the FBI. You know, it's like, hey, the mob don't care anymore. Hoffa would be dead anyway from old age. They don't care, but it's like, hey, watch it. You know, I wonder how many years they're going to keep this crap up when somebody says, well, my great-great-grandfather said he was buried here. You know, they're probably making a mess. Hey,
I'm all about it.
You got to go pick this guy's yard up.
Right. And, you know, and that seems to be a big thing. Because, I mean, I believe that the family needs closure. Don't get me wrong. I'm not discounting the family in any way in this. But I think this has become such a circus that it just proves how screwed up we are, that a priority for our FBI and our federal government is to go out digging holes because somebody tells them to. They got to use a dozen agents to watch one guy dig a hole, all right, for days on end.
Well,
we can't even spend the time to investigate the Sarnaev brothers who had the Boston bombings. That's alarming to me.
Yeah,
it's just wrong.
On top of that, you know, hey, it's been one crisis, one scandal after another. And you got to wonder sometimes if the old goop sat there and said, hey, I know where he's buried, and they probably said, yeah, we don't care. If somebody higher up says, no, you do care because, you know what, it's a diversion, it's a distraction. Go get America wondering where Hoffa is again, you know.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
The same token, I remember when there was no need for diversion, some hitman who was a verified hitman, he told them something similar. They didn't go looking because they weren't going to find him, which, you know, you got to give the mob props. They usually pretty bright buds, you know. Unless somebody rolls over, it's actively involved, you don't get them. And he just said, look, he said, we stripped him down. The guy said, I was there. He said, we stripped him down naked. We strapped it. We duct taped a couple pieces of metal to his legs, and we threw him in one of the Great Lakes. It's done because you're not going to find him.
You're absolutely right. And don't forget, you know, they buy off judges all the time too. But it is pretty incredible that we're still going down this. And the reason they say that they're going down this road now is because back in 1972, Detroit mobster Jack Tocco. T-O-C-C-O, not your, you know, burrito or anything, but Detroit mobster Jack Tocco purchased 45 acres of land on this vacant field. You know, Hoffa, of course, was the head of Teamsters Union, so now this guy is saying that Hoffa was buried in this field underneath some concrete slabs on this field. Well, it did turn out, as they were digging today, they did find some concrete slabs. So I'm curious to see if they find Hoffa. I don't think they will, but I want this thing gone, because the next time we have a terrorist attack on American soil, and we will, folks, I'm not telling you I'm doing it. What I'm telling you is we can't be naive enough to think that it's not going to happen after everything we've been through. I want people to remember this, that we're spending this kind of resources instead of investigating what we should be investigating. This is just ridiculous to me.
Yeah.
Now,
well, like I say, you know, I think they're just being played. I think it's a diversion. You know, they're doing it from both ends. The FBI probably just as soon not investigate it. Think, we don't care. Everybody's dead. You know, and I think it's a diversion. I think the old mobster's having some fun with them. And the fact is, what city was this located in or outside of?
Outside Detroit, up in Michigan, where he's from, you know, up
okay,
in there.
Well, you know what? Give the mob some credit. Why would they buy a piece of property that could be traced to them and put one of the highest profile mob hits of all time on your property? Why would you encase it in concrete? It makes it easier to find. It preserves the body. Look, you've got a large lake. You're right there. You just take a boat ride and chuck them. Ain't nobody going to the bottom of Lake Michigan to find anything, and it's very cheap. It's uninvolved.
I think you're definitely on the right track.
Bottom of the lake.
I think you're definitely on the right track. But, yeah, and there's a reason that I think this is interesting, too. We have another story come out about union bosses up in New Jersey and all that stuff during the Hurricane Sandy cleanup operations. Apparently, these thugs are still doing what Jimmy Hoffa taught them. They're unionized, local employees. Have been accused of harassing, intimidating non-union workers with LGS, which is a private disaster cleanup firm. LGS won a government contract to restore Long Island, New York, after Hurricane Sandy. It was about $70 million is what the contract was worth. Once Hurricane Sandy went through the New York, New Jersey shoreline, LGS won a bid. They were to haul away debris, clear the roads, remove damaged trees, etc. New York's Nassau County is who hired the company. LGS is paying its workers, and a lot of those came from out of state. There's no doubt about that. But they were paying them market-based wages rather than union wages. And the reason they were doing that was federal law required it. They were in compliance with federal law regarding any disaster recovery jobs. Well, federal law says basically that they're going to dictate to you which wages you pay. If you're required to pay union wages, then you're going to pay union wages. You're going to hire union workers. If you're required to pay market-based wages, which are typically lower than union wages, you can hire anybody you want to. And the reality is in this situation, these LGS contract workers were just trying to make a living. They were having people yell at them to take their country ass back to Mississippi or get your dumb Tennessee ass off that piece of equipment. You know, they were being threatened, and there's no doubt about that. Some of these guys would walk to them and say, sure, it would be sad if your truck's caught on fire. That's a veiled threat. There's no way around that. And one guy was threatened by the vice president of the Union Local 138 up there, Phil Capobianco, called up one of the guys and told him, you've got to get us involved and hire us, And of course, this guy told him, look, I tried to hire you guys. You refused to work for the rates that we can pay. You wouldn't work for the money we're allowed to pay you because they wanted to stick around for union wages. So it's not his fault. Then this vice president, Capobianco, says, I just hate for anything to happen. And started telling the guy what his home address was, his wife and kids' names, where the kids went to school, where his wife was at. He knew more about his wife's whereabouts and his kids' whereabouts than the guys, the husband did, because he was out of town working. This union boss, that is nothing more than a threat. And ironically or crazily enough, nobody's doing anything about the threat. But this is the unions. This is what these idiots do up there. This is Chicago politics. This is New York politics.
I do have to laugh a little bit when you mentioned, the fact of the matter is some of them from out of state. I'm sorry, but the Jersey boys got to deal with that because the nation is bailing you out. So if, guys down there, if you're from Mississippi or Alabama or Kentucky or wherever, it's our tax dollars bailing you guys out and cleaning up your mess. So if some of our guys want to get the job, that's fine. Now, I do have to kind of sit there and snicker about this union boss coming up and getting all thuggish with some crew from Mississippi. And I just hope one of those Mississippi boys looked at him and said, and you're done. Why don't you come on down to Mississippi and make good on that threat, boy?
Well, in this particular case,
but we're going home when we're done, and you're more than welcome to come on down to Mississippi, boy.
Oh, yeah. Well, in this particular case now, this source, I'm with you, and this source who's wanting to remain anonymous according to the Daily Caller, that's where we're getting this story from, he actually tried to do the right thing. He said that he was a combat veteran, and he was shocked and frightened, about that phone call with this union vice president when he started talking about his family and everything else. He said at that point it was no longer polite to him. He told him what he could do with himself, what he could do with his union, what he could do with his threats. But then he had to go out and hire a security company to watch his house and kids because he was so concerned about them. And LGS company put security cameras at every site they were operating at. But what's miraculous here is he did the right thing. He went to law enforcement and everything else, and they said there's nothing they could do, because this was just free speech. It wasn't a threat. It wasn't harassment. It's not – I don't get this. They call this intimidation, but it's not a threat or harassment. So there's nothing they can do. Now, if you can't do anything about a situation like that, how in the hell do we justify anything else we do? I mean, if I sit here and use the conspiracy word on air, they want to threaten or harass me. They want to hack my computer or anything else. If I sit here and make an accusation against somebody, I've got to be able to prove it. I don't get this. This guy is clearly making a threat to a worker who's just doing their job, but because he's a vice president of a union, and I guarantee you that that's why he got off. He's bought the lawmakers. I just don't understand that. But nobody is doing anything about this. This is something that needs to be discussed and brought out because this is union thuggery from the 1950s mindset, Ed. I just don't understand that today.
Yeah, not only that, but it reeks of a certain desperation. I mean, you and I both know a lot of union people, and they're damn good workers, and they're damn good people. And a lot of times, there's certain types of union contractors that I'll prefer to use union because they're trained, nothing against the non-union guys, but they're trained better. Union electricians, unless we do it in-house, union electricians are the only people that'll work on our on our electric, on our, you know, our electricity, on our power grid at work. It's good. But
well,
a lot of times they'll tell you. They'll tell you that it's poured. It's like, yeah, well, we might be paid more, but we're damn productive. And it's a damn shame that these other unions up in New Jersey, they can't, they're not making the argument, you know, we provide a quality product for a quality price or a quality service for a quality price. No, you're not doing that. You're just saying, hey, we're going to kick your ass and we're going to mess your family up and burn your truck. Because it's a damn shame that you got no, you've got so little pride in the value that you bring to the table that all you bring to the table is a baseball bat. You know, that's a sad, sad statement for the unions up on the East Coast.
Well, it really is. And you know, I mean, all these unions up on the East Coast are all mafia-controlled anyway, and there's no doubt about that. But it's fascinating because, you know, it's not like LGS did not try to hire union workers, but if the federal government is only going to pay them, let's say, $15 an hour, which would be the market rate, and the union guy says he is not going to work for less than $25 an hour, which is the union rate, what is LGS supposed to do? Lose money? Because they got to pay, you know, they got to pay almost a double rate for a union guy that the feds aren't going to reimburse them for. That would be like me ordering parts from you and telling you to sell them to me at half the cost, at half of your cost, you know, because I'm your buddy and I deserve it. That's not the way it's supposed to work. You can't lose money like that. Nobody can. And more alarming is after all of this is said and done, once this guy went and made the complaint and started talking about this, all of a sudden LGS is now under investigation. The union leaders asked their politically connected Democratic friends to start investigating the company, and they started making up all these lying, trumped-up charges. So now LGS is always in the news, you know, being charged with all kinds of stuff that they haven't done because the union didn't get bought off. I mean, that's the bottom line. And then now you've got the Democratic officials who have been bought off by the unions sitting out there accusing Republican Nassau County Executive Ed Mangiano. He's the one who selected LGS to handle these cleanup efforts. He's accusing him of hiring LGS as a kickback to the guy who owns LGS because the guy who owns LGS donated $16,500 to Mangiano's campaign. Now, that to me would be alarming in most situations, and I would be the first one on the bandwagon to sit here and say it sure looks like a kickback to me, except Mangiano wasn't elected or anything else. When this happened, he didn't get the job until after the cleanup work started. After the cleanup work started, Mangiano was elected, and LGS was approved to do all of this work and got this contract before Mangiano was ever elected to anything, before he even took office. He had absolutely nothing to do with it. So this throws that argument completely out of the water. But this is what we can consistently get into when you get into unions anymore today. This is not a situation where you're looking for
you know,
the right
and
thing.
And the thing is, to me, in a way, it's like they're not thinking proactively at all. I mean, look, the federal government's not reimbursing its union rates. Don't go beat up on the local officials whose hands are tied. Don't go beat up on the owner of the company whose hands are tied. Look, you know, if you've got all these connections with all these high-up Democrats, call Chuckie Schumer up. Call Elizabeth Warren up. Call some of your East Coast Democrat senators and in your whole army of East Coast Democrat congressmen. Get them to change the damn law. Yeah? Make the reimbursement rate higher, you know? Call up Obama. Yeah, he's pro-union. He's Democrat. Then call up, pull all your leverage to get the reimbursement rate higher as opposed to because let's face it, like you said, mathematically, nobody's going to hire them if they lose $10 for every man-hour work. That's set by the federal government, not by the contractors and not by the local.
Oh, I'm totally with you. I mean, I've done some city work back when I was a contractor, you know, and you're required to pay a certain amount of wages. I mean, you're required to pay this on your hourly wage. You don't go above it. You don't go below it. This is required. So, you know, whatever job you're on, that wage may vary depending on, you know, what prevailing wage is for what you're doing. So when I hire employees, if I would normally pay a guy $9 or $10 for cleanup, for example, which is a, you know, minuscule low wage job, you know, well, they might require me to pay him $12. So when I bid that job, I'm gonna bid it based on their wage scale, not mine. I don't get to profit off of that because they go back and ask you, but did you get paid $12 an hour? And if he says no, guess what? I'm in serious trouble. That's a jailable offense. So you don't do that kind of stuff. What's really interesting, too, is that Agoglia, the guy that owns LGS. He's born and raised in Long Island, and that's where he lives today. So this cleanup effort, you know, that he's doing, he's been doing disaster recovery cleanup since 2001. He's a member of the community. It was his own personal community that was destroyed and hurt. You know, he's doing everything right, and he's going to get this kind of garbage from the unions. And I just thought it was pathetic that they could go down that road. Now, you talked a minute ago about expensive stuff like that. Well, here's another one for you. You know, we're talking about the unions. Let's go to a non-union situation here. Walmart, one of our favorite places. I want to get into this story before we get out of here, Ed. But Walmart, one of our favorite places. You know, we continue to talk about the cost of Walmart, cost to taxpaying citizens in subsidies and everything else. Well, according to a congressional study, now this is Obama's own place here now. This has nothing to do with me. This is the Congress, right? According to a congressional study, every taxpayer is being dinged about $6,000 in extra taxes per Walmart employee. Walmart's wages and benefits are so low. You can go to Upworthy.com. That's another one that's not mainstream, folks. Walmart's wages and benefits are so low that, you know, we've talked many times about how many of their workers go on Medicaid. They get Section 8 housing assistance, AFDC, food stamps, everything in the world. That costs every taxpayer in America $6,000 per employee. You want to know what that adds up to us? Walmart has over 2 million employees. At $6,000 per employee, at 2 million even, that's $12 billion. That's costing the American taxpayer for Walmart to do business. Ed, you know, this is the own government studies. I mean, who can argue with that now?
Do what now?
I said, this is our own government studies. Who can argue with that now? They can't say that we're making
well,
that
I
stuff.
Mean,
this is a congressional Congress.
But the point, as I've said many times before, you know, the point being, Walmart's a business. They're designed to make money. That's what they exist for. In a way, yes, it's unsavory that they do that. It's regrettable that they do that. It's, you know, you wish they could be more like Costco or a lot of other employers and pay their employees, you know, give them 20 hours and pay them decent. But then again, if the government, the government keeps wanting to focus on Walmart, I think the government needs to focus on the government. It's like, guys, you can't deal them the aces like that. You can't say, you know, you can't set all these parameters and then when Walmart goes, well, we figure that's a pretty easy system to game because the government designed it poorly, then yeah, it's not that. I look at it, it's not Walmart.
Well, and that's something we both agreed on, and I still agree with you. It's not Walmart. They're working under the rules that they're given to work with. But Walmart is making record-breaking profits. Now, Congress is sitting out there with this congressional study talking about how much it costs taxpayers. My argument here is simple. When do the taxpayers stand up and say enough's enough? Why are we subsidizing private corporations instead of forcing them to do their job? Why are the Walmart workers not walking out in mass? You know, this is my challenge to the Walmart workers. If they want more money, if they want more hours, if they want better treatment, you know, you don't have to unionize to walk out. I mean, in fact, in Kentucky,
yeah,
it's an at-will state. If you walk
well,
off a job, you're non-union,
yeah,
it's a termination offense.
I would even go further than that. I'd say, look, you know what? Once again, Congress works for you, in spite of the fact that they think it's the opposite way.
Right.
Congress works to demand that they get a little more creative, demand that they go a little more thorough when they write these rules, you know, and somebody looks back and does a little cause and effect study and says, okay, you know, blah, blah, blah. How could this, you know, do a quick study and say, okay, how could this backfire against us? How could this, could somebody play us with the way we set this up? You know, the first thing I did when Kane, you know, whatever, Carol Kane or whatever, the presidential candidate, Carol, the 999, took me about 20 minutes and said, oh, yeah, I can game this system. If I was unscrupulous, I'd tell you straight away. You know, I could, if it's that easy to game, if you designed it where it's that easy to game, then you designed it poorly. So go back here, go back. Quit your belly aching up here in Congress or whoever commissioned this study. Quit all your damn belly aching and design a system that's not so easy to game, period. get to work.
Well, here's another thing too, and this is going to contrast completely with the free market initiatives that we always talk about. But I really want your thoughts on it. I was having a discussion about this earlier today with somebody that I was meeting with, and I'm not going to disclose her name. But he actually made an argument that what if you did this? Because we're conservatives. We don't like taxes or any of that stuff. Although we know that there has to be a need for it, we don't like them. So they should be lower. But his thing was this: Walmart is making record-breaking profits. They're making record-breaking profits. The people that own Walmart. So when we look at this, the Waltons are making all these record-breaking profits, but those profits are derived from $12 billion from U.S. taxpayer subsidies. So what would happen if the U.S. decided to go down the road and said, look, for every dollar you make in profit, we're going to take 50 cents back for every dollar we have to subsidize your employees? Would that be right, wrong? Would that make these corporations more accountable? You know, that's an interesting thing that I had not looked at or thought of before. And I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence with that.
Yeah, I'm on the fence with that, too. I mean, something like that, it would have, once again, it would have to be done just like your current system. If they do it thoroughly and cover mm-hmm. all the ifs, ands, and buts,
mm-hmm.
something like that could work. But I'd also be concerned, as I have witnessed in my case, you know, what do you do about an employee that comes to you and says, hey, I'm looking for part-time work. You know, I mean, maybe you offer them full-time work. And they say, oh, no, because, you know, I don't want to go above a certain limit because that's where my benefits come in. You know, it's like,
well,
enough to offset my Section 8 and everything.
See, so I thought
about
it.
You're really going to have to go off the pay scale. So, I mean, do you penalize an employer for that? But, I mean, if they did their homework, yeah, I think when you've got a wholesale notice op a rundown like Walmart does, I think mm-hmm. if they did their homework and established something like that and maybe set in something where if an employee simply declined the opportunity to make more money, you know, you had a paper they signed or something like that, of course,
right.
they would probably start losing their benefits. But, hey, fair is fair.
I'm totally with you on that, and I think there would actually be a way around that. When you offer an employee a job, if you're offering them a full-time job, you know, and they say, no, I have to go part-time, you make them sign a piece of paper. Well, look, if you want a job here, you got to sign this paper. We offered you a full-time job. You chose to go part-time. So you give them a part-time
yeah.
job. You send that paper to the government. They lose their benefits. It's their fault. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of
yeah.
ways to do this. But that's a long detail.
I think something like that could work because that would, again, because it's a head-scratcher sometimes. When you hire somebody, they're a pretty good employee, and you say, hey, we'd like to move you into full-time. And they go,
well,
no, that's okay. You know, you get that response, and you know what they're doing. You know,
sure.
Everybody knows what they're doing. I mean, it is somewhat maddening. So, yeah, I think that would be, if they thought their way through it, once again, you know, the government needs to think their way through it. They need to bring in some people that are obviously smarter than them and say, hey, look, let's work the cause and effect. How could this system be gained? How could we design it towards not a detriment to people who are trying, but just aren't connecting the dots right now?
Well, I think I agree with you. And that's something we'll have a long conversation about that in the very near future because we are flat out of time. Ed, final thoughts. And before you sign off, hang on as soon as you get through, okay? I want to talk to you for a minute off air. All right?
Okay.
Final thoughts, man.
Final thoughts, you know, it's just, like I say, once again, right now it's got sort of a bait and switch going on with the government. So I look at it, and you know, I always say stay cynical. It's like, okay, so the government's pulling a PR game, whether they're pulling a PR game in the form of, a diversion to the whole Hoffa hunt all over again, or whether they're doing some kind of diversion saying, oh, look what Walmart's doing. You know, don't pay attention to the fact that we designed a system that's so easily gamed. But look what Walmart's doing, or look, hey, we're searching for Hoffa again. NSA's old news. We're looking for Hoffa. I just tell people, stay cynical, and you know, if they're telling you to look at the right hand, they keep your eye on the left hand because anymore, like I say, I hate to have to say it sometimes, but I've lost so much faith in government. I've lost so much, you know, if they're saying one thing, immediately get cynical and say, okay, what's up with that?
Well, and you know what? You're not alone. According to another poll, yet another poll by CNN, we quoted one of their polls last night. It seems like more and more Americans are starting to realize what's going on. According to CNN poll, the latest poll, a growing number of Americans now believe the senior White House officials are the ones who ordered the IRS to target conservative political groups. You know, when you look at this IRS controversy, you know, it's pretty alarming. The number now says that at least 47% believe the White House officials ordered all these targeted conservative political group things going on. You know, last month it was 37%, so it's up 10%. That tells me that more and more people are paying attention. But what's the big picture here? We're going to spend resources trying to find Jimmy Hoffa's body for the umpteenth time, based on an 85-year-old now supposedly has credibility. We're going to go through, and we're going to go ahead and put dozens of FBI agents out there standing around with their thumb up their butt all day. We're going to have the NSA go through every phone record, every text mail, every email, everything else, on every American citizen, just because they can, or if they say they can. We now find out that U.S. officials are going to now meet with the Taliban in Qatar, in Doha, Qatar, to discuss ending the war after 11 years. And we didn't know how to follow up on the Sarnaev brothers when they decided to do the Boston bombing. If you think something's not fishy in America in the way that we're running our country and security, you'd be wrong. There's definitely something going on there. Tomorrow night, the Tale of the Truth will not be here. You will be stuck with me alone, so get ready for it. I'm sure we'll have something great to do. I always have something in the bag, let me tell you. And, of course, Thursday night I'll be here, or we'll have a replay of Dale's show. I'll make that announcement tomorrow night. I've got to check out some time considerations because I've got to make a few changes myself to resolve this. To my good friend Dale Gillespie, Godspeed, sir. I know you got a lot on your plate right now, and I know in a few weeks when you finally get all straightened out, we'll be back on air. And I know about you need the time. And on a personal note, I've got a cousin who I grew up with as a sister who is dying of cancer. She's down to hours, or at least very least a day or two. And, you know, she does listen to the show on occasion. So to Donna, we love you. Godspeed, my dear. And, you know, we'll talk to you guys later. That's it for tonight. You know, we'll see you tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. Have a great night, folks. Thanks for listening.